today to talk about the Great Commons strategic considerations in the copy fights. DJ Dynamouse took the vocals from Jazz C's The Black Album and remixed it with Beatles' The White Album. In his creation, The Grey Album, he was breaking the copyright law. He was climbing up on shoulders of giants. I guess he just did it, and so did his work. The success of his work would never have been possible without file sharing. Mashup culture exists in the same bowl of production, obtaining, downloading, remixing, reinserting, distribution, and uploading. And sometimes, like in this case, the work escapes the claws of the copyright owners. A claw that has been stretching to bring us back in time before internet, computers, and file sharing. But we will continue and protest against restrictions of file sharing by making file sharing better. The remix has always been here, in the way we as beings become, splitting and mapping and absorbing the world with our minds. When computers made a similar splitting possible by storing and processing information, a breakdown of the mass medial dichotomies started. The computer that takes this property and as it starts its most basic function, copies and remixes. It is vital to acknowledge that we are confronted with intellectual property considerations in our daily life, from kids playing with Pokemon to yoga masters. This is something that has become part of our life in the most concrete way, because the possibility of the universal machine, the computer. It is not gray in terms of the law, but as possibility, as technology and technique. It is not optional, but inscribed in the technique we use every day. The gray is not here exactly by an effort, but rather as the shortest way to make our life work with technology. The shading, the tuning, the twisting is omnipresent. It's not something we can wish away. What this really is about is our conditions of living, how information is used, transferred, and owned in society. As humans, creators, amateurs, or fans, in the desire for pleasure and in a chain of small habits, we make the world appear. On a personal level, we all have stories that describe this experience. With the remix as the norm, steps to a democratization of creativity are taken, and the process of liberating the myth of a special class of artists, isolated from the rest of us fans, amateurs, and consumers are taken. Like in a contemporary epic, with the creation at our fingertips, we are now pounding the mass medial aura, and we are in a state of transgressing the hierarchical consumer-producer society.
Okay, so some words about what we are going to talk about today. We all know what is gray, and we intend to keep it that way. And this gray Tuesday, we're here to talk about mainly the Pirate Bay, Piratbygon, Piratgruppen, and Art Liberated. And what the fuck? Yeah, and here we'll touch upon some of this year's major events in, like, the, if you could call it, the Nordic copy fight. Like the Polar Pirate Prize, the 1st of May demonstration, the new copyright law in Sweden, the raid at the ISP Bahnhof, and the launch of the project Videndeling, and some more things that we hope you will enjoy. And the Pirate Bay is probably the most internationally known project, I guess. the BitTorrent tracker based in Sweden that has now become the most popular BitTorrent site in the world. It receives more daily hits than CNN. And it was started by Pirat Bygon, the piracy bureau of piracy or pirate association in Sweden, and who is now running together with a sister organization, Piratgruppen, in Denmark, that both are, if you can call them organizations, they are organizations that promote information piracy and supports the free culture through discussions, events, internet communities, media performances, and advice. Well, developing the questions about intellectual property, file sharing, and so on. So, Pirat Bygon was born in late summer 2003 from an, it was kind of born from a social internet radio broadcast community and like people from one of Sweden's largest hacker groups, mainly run through IRC, not this kind of traditional organization, maybe. Well, it was initiated to support the free copying of culture and has today evolved into some kind of combination between a think tank, internet community, and information site with, in Swedish, you see it here, with news, forums, articles, guides, and shop. Today it's like 55,000 members registered here. And in November 2003, we started the BitTorrent tracker, Pirate Bay. And well, it was intended as a kind of small experiment, but so no one expected it to grow that fast, but it did. And when we saw it was turning into the biggest tracker in the world, it was very natural for us to split it off and let it stand on its own legs, so to say. So today, Pirat Bygon and Pirate Bay exists as separate but related entities. And the Pirate Bay, earlier this year, went through a major internationalization. It can now be browsed in languages from Mandarin to Icelandic. And, well, financially it's relying on donations and a little advertising. But all money that went in has gone to buy more hardware to the server park in Gothenburg. And presently, the Pirate Bay crew has been coordinating some issues with all the other major BitTorrent trackers in the world. And the plan is to evolve the next generation of the BitTorrent protocol. I have no details to offer, but some of the Pirate Bay crew will show up here soon. Well, so something more about what we've done with Pirat Bygon this year. This summer we released the book Copy Me, a pocketbook in Swedish about copy fight and file sharing culture. And it sold like 2,000 hard copies while also available for free download. Pretty good in Sweden. I will soon return to why these questions have been quite big by us. But one interesting thing with releasing this kind of book as a paper copy is the reception of it in traditional mass media. Because book reviewers in major newspapers have claimed that Pirat Bygon now initially was very immature and not worth taking seriously at all. But now everything has changed with this good and thought-provoking book. But anyway, the book was basically a paper version of texts that had been available on the website all the time. So when the traditional mass media journalists say that it is more serious now when printed on paper, it only reflects the paper journalists' valuation of the internet. Well, so some words about Denmark, our Danish friends that could not show up here. But Their equivalent or sister organization was founded in 1 year after Piratbyrån in Sweden in 2004. And they have caused even more interesting responses by them. Very fast, they were nominated by the Association of Danish Music Journalists for the Idea of the Year Award. And the copyright industry turned hysteric. And the big trade union federation in Denmark withdrew their sponsorship for the prize award, seeing that this is some kind of attack on workers' rights. And but then the interesting thing happened that the very large Roskilde Festival went in as a new sponsor to show their support for the pirates. And that's of course interesting because it shows that, I mean, we often talk about the music industry as some kind of entity, some kind of evil entity, but I mean, the festival side of the music industry can be really pro-piracy, no doubt. So in Denmark, the prosecution of individual file sharers had started earlier than in Sweden. So one of Piratgruppen's first actions was to set up a fund for juridical support. And the aim was said to protect and expand this gray zone. And a similar fund is now about to be established in Sweden too, as the anti-piracy persecutions have started by us too now. Well, another project of the Danish Piratgruppen is called Vidensdeling, and where students are encouraged to digitalize and share expensive books on their reading lists, creating a digital library. So far, the campaign has resulted in books being shared on the Pirate Bay, while the publishing companies have joined the entertainment industry in Denmark in their desperate outcries. And this year, after Denmark, it was Norway's turn to follow by starting an own initiative called Piratgruppen 2. And Finland are now on their way, so we are like kind of consolidating some kind of northern pro-piracy axis. And of course, we are always interested in establishing contact with other allies, forming an even larger axis of piracy. So, Palle.
I would like to say something where my involvement with Piratbyrån comes from. I would like to do this because it describes a personal experience of living under the current copyright right regime that I was referring to in the beginning. I've been involved with Piratbyrån since more than a year now, and we met at a party for the best Swedish website, and since we had many aspirations in common, we decided to do some kind of collaboration. I wanted to engage in Piratbyrån because it is the best way for me to oppose the current copyright regime and basically make a link to the redistribution of culture, which I find to be the key element in bring about a funnier place to live in. In 1995, I did a project, Museum Meltdown, in collaboration with another artist, Tobias Bernstrup. With this project, we got international recognition as the first group of artists to use computer games in our artist practice. Museum Meltdown consists in a series of site-specific computer game installations in European art museums. Using the graphical engine of existing video games like Doom, Duke Nukem 3D, Quake, Half-Life, we transformed the museum architecture into violent computer games, where the museum visitor could wander around inside the virtual version of the museum and killing and blowing up masterpieces. Since then, I've continued to work with computer game-based projects. The last one, Evil Interiors, are computer games reconstructions of movies like Psycho, Reservoir Dogs, and Scarface. I have experienced and loved the power and potential of the open file and information structure of the computer game community, where files are shared among kids for the benefit of the evolution of playing, which basically is the same mentality of sharing that the game culture was originated from. This experience is essential for me in the way I look at the possibility of digital culture today. Another key experience that led to the involvement with Piratbyrån was born in 2000 when I made a video that was censored and stopped on copyright grounds. The video Pippi Examples consisted of short sequences in slow motion from Pippi Longstocking films made around 1970. The video was made to question the sexualized common gaze. The copyright holders, the Swedish film industry, disapproved of the video, and after a national debate, a settlement was made and all the copies of Pippi Examples was destroyed. I came to understand that I had to fight for my freedom of speech and that I could no longer only rely on my identity as an artist to be able what I do. My work with Piratbyrån is one way for me to map out, understand the relation and powers involved with production of art in society and finding a power to oppose the current copyright regime. In my work, I always appropriate, borrow, or steal other people's work to make something new. I live in, I distribute with, and I take from the circulation of information. The configuration of the medial structures are my workspace. The motivation for my work is try to intervene in this structure and expand the gray zone. I'm now running a project called Art Liberated about art, censorship, and intellectual property with Piratbyrån as an answer to my experiences. The idea of Art Liberated is to understand and map out and help artistic appropriation, to collect cases of censorship and alike in one site, contextualize the work that otherwise would fade away as anomalies. I believe, contrary to the common opinion, that we should have a basic right to take from whatever passes us in the stream of media, and that this is essential for the cultural existence of the information age, because we are the function that makes this circulation possible. This is not a right that can be restricted. Instead, this is the way one survives inside this pit. The Pirate Year of 2005. The project Art Liberated was launched in January at another of Piratbyrån's event, the Polar Pirate Prize. The Polar Pirate Prize is an annual award show and a party including seminars awarding the worst and the best of the pirate world. This marked the start of a very, very hectic and interesting year.
Yeah, and I will tell you something about what's been happening in Sweden this year, because things escalated very much in March when Sweden's anti-piracy lobby organization, they called Anti-Piratbyrån, they in fact were founded before us, so we just had to delete the anti and had our name clear. Okay, Anti-Piratbyrån, they managed to arrange a raid at the Swedish ISP called Bahnhof, claiming that they hosted unlicensed material. And the raid was conducted in a kind of unlawful manner, and it was discovered later that the anti-piracy lobby had in fact paid an infiltrator for several months to upload copyright-protected material and place hardware at the ISP to arrange a raid. And the public before a group called Angry Young Hackers hacked Anti-Piratbyrån's webpage and their email, and exposing their mail conversation with this infiltrator and with the Motion Picture Association of America, too. I don't know if they are here. So, and that spawned the public outcry, of course. And the lawyer and spokesperson for the Anti-Piratbyrån, Henrik Pontén, he has like received thousands of hate SMS like every week, including death threats from a lot of angry young kids. And it turned on a big public debate. And many other people start to realize that like the war against file sharing has wide-ranging consequences for internet freedom and also business freedom in general. And the opposition against the copyright industry in Sweden has broadened a lot since then. So, I mean, for example, a lot of right-wing libertarians in Sweden have turned into hard defenders of file sharing, understanding what's going on if you just let these kind of organizations like
arranging raids at any company they want to. And so this kind of libertarian critique of intellectual property has also experienced an upswing. So politically, there are really people on all kinds of the spectras you can find sympathizing with Piotr Pigon, maybe except for the ruling Social Democrats. but all the political parties are, in general, of course, officially anti-piracy. So, but another really funny outcome of the of this Bahnhof raid and the hacking of angry young hackers, it's that the Motion Pictures Association of America, the MPAA, obviously was about to intentionally spread a lie about terrorist connections. They sent out an international press release about the raid in Stockholm. And if you open that Microsoft Word document and choose Trace Changes, you could find statements claiming that Swedish authorities had found a link between the suspected release group and a terrorist group known as the Yellow Brigades. Yellow Brigades. Well, that was in fact the name of a group. It was a group of German elite soldiers fighting for Sweden in the 30 Years' War. Most of them got killed in the Battle of Lützen, year 1632. And since then, no one has heard of them, until the movie industry started to hunt them in a Swedish server hall in 2005. I mean, if the movie industry could, like, channel that kind of phantasm into making better movies, I mean, what should they worry for? All right.
Yeah, the 1st of May demonstration. At this hot spring, at the 1st of May, it was time for all internet lovers, file sharers, and pirates to gather in Stockholm. Piratbyrån celebration in a park featured music, three speakers talking about creativity and the transgression of the copyright law. A hand-to-hand copy swap was expanded to a coffin where you could place and share CDs. The counterfiling of the anti-pirate organization regarding the raid at Bahnhof was at the same time handed over to the police. A big crowd of something like 800 people with very different background came, with banners like "No software patents, sharing is caring, and all your base station belongs to us." The paroles were, "Copy me, we will continue to copy everything. Don't touch our internet, and the welfare begins at 100 megabytes." It is important to know that this aggressively humorous attitude is something that characterized the pro-piracy movement that we are presenting. One internationally famous example are the letters written in response to the legal threats from companies like Microsoft, DreamWorks, and Warner Brothers from the Pirate Bay.
They are to be found, their websites, as you may know.
Check it out, it's great.
Oh, the rest of the Swedish delegation is coming.
Oh.
Yeah, so back to the dramatics. After this Bahnhof raid and the 1st of May demonstration, we also had the first case against an individual file sharer in Sweden. And the sentence came a couple of months ago. And we have been, in our argumentation, we are trying to highlight the relevant things in our argumentation. And number one is that the guy who shared, he shared one movie and he was convicted to pay a fine. And that, under Swedish law, basically means that the same process cannot be repeated. Because it's not that hard crime. And Sweden has secrecy on IP addresses, meaning that the police may only inquire ISPs after the identity of someone on the net if it is a more of serious offense than so. And then Antti Piotbjörn, of course, said that no one should feel safe. They will catch people anyway just by reporting a greater number of movies to the police. And that may work on peer-to-peer networks like Direct Connect. However, on BitTorrent, you cannot see how many files an individual file sharer is sharing, only what IP addresses that are sharing one particular torrent, and that's quite important. So clarifying that might weaken them trying to scare people. So we try to point such things out and show that network protocols are almost always one step ahead of the juridic protocols. So we try to show how hollow the anti-pirate organization's claims of their own success are. Then the second thing we try to point out is regarding this judgment of the file sharers is that the courts have chosen to rely on screen dumps as evidence. And screen dumps submitted to the police by anti-piratbyrån themselves. And it is, of course, very controversial to let private lobby groups representing the movie industry get that kind of control over jurisdictions. So it's basically about clarifying what a screen dump is and what road we are turning into if we accept it that way. So we demonstrated the madness by producing a piece of software called the Evidence Machine, letting anyone go to a site and produce fake evidence of file sharing against anyone. The juridical dilemma is still not settled, so hopefully this kind of pedagogical tools can demonstrate what it's about. And it's also been translated to Danish and so on. I guess it's this problem of screen dumps in the juridical system. It's not only in Scandinavia. And another big issue of big debate in Sweden this year has been anti-piratbyrån's registering of IP addresses of suspected file sharers. And that habit was banned, as they had not applied for the special license you've got to have under Swedish law to do that. However, later it turned around, and they got the dispense from the authorities, but it has, as you see, in many ways become obvious to the public that the anti-piracy lobby is also operating in their own and very doubtful gray zone, legally. But of course, they are dependent on the existence of police officials willing to give priority to the hunting of file sharers over, so to say, real criminality. And that raises very controversial ethical questions that, of course, should remain open and have been quite open for debate in Sweden this year. And I mean, most policemen themselves are obviously not interested in hunting kids file sharing. So it's easy to point that at the totally unreasonable costs for taxpayers for every victim of the anti-piracy hunt. And there are people who are doing that too. But we are maybe focusing more on other things. So, well, another thing in Sweden is the new copyright law, the implementation of the EU copyright law that came the 1st of July this summer. Harder copyright law, where, for a long time it was legal to download music for personal use in Sweden, while the uploading of copyrighted material was criminal. But since the 1st of July, downloading also turned illegal. Well, while the anti-piracy lobby, of course, wants us to believe that it suddenly has become very dangerous to be a file sharer, and also many pro-file sharing people have been spoken up against the mass criminalization of teenagers and so on. Piratbyrån has tried to present a more realistic picture because, I mean, most file sharers use BitTorrent, in Sweden anyway. And with BitTorrent, every downloader is also an uploader. And therefore, they were exactly as criminal before this new law as they are today. It doesn't seem to have changed anything, and I mean, the rates of file sharing has not lowered in Sweden, of course. And generally, we think it's quite important not to accept this talking about so-called downloading, as if downloading was some kind of activity completely separate from the uploading. So we insist on talking about file sharing as a horizontal activity. Well, the free sharing of culture has very many sides and so many gray zones and safe havens that the anti-piracy lobby can only attack a very small part at a time. Or, of course, they can attack free internet communications in general, as they more and more try to do right now. Rendering this dilemma visible is done when we give up talking about things in the copyright industry's universal terms, and instead shifts the focus to the diverse reality of cultural circulations that we could call the grey commons.
The grey zone also becomes visible if you put the attention to how arbitrary the very definition of copying is, how it is based on outdated technical categories. There is a technical point in clarifying how it's getting harder to distinguish between local transfers of data, for example, in wireless environments and file sharing between different systems. Clarifying that digital technology is built on copying and that internet is built on file sharing. Copying is always already there. The only thing the copyright can do is to impose a pseudo-moral differentiation between so-called normal workings and immoral. For the copyright industry, it is of extreme importance to keep people uninformed of the real workings of network computers. They want to make an artificial distinction between downloading and streaming as equivalent to record distribution and radio broadcasting. Our role here is to keep insisting of that the only difference lies in the software configuration at the receiving end. But copyright law will never be able to acknowledge that. It has to rely on fiction, on a kind of cognitive mapping, where notions valid for traditional one-way mass media are forcefully applied to the internet. We call this mental rights management.
Yeah, mental rights management. It's essential for the copyright industry to keep the majority of computer users trapped in believing that the window of their web browser is exactly a window through which they can look at information located elsewhere under someone else's control. Our job here is about making clear that everything you see on your screen or hear through your speakers is already under your control. Zeros and ones have no taste, no smell, no color, be they parts of pirated material or not. And therefore, it's impossible to construct a computer that cannot reproduce and manipulate these zeros and ones, as such a machine would no longer be a computer, but something as grotesque as a digital simulation of the machines of the last century. But of course, the aim of copyright is to do exactly that. Copyright was basically born in 18th century England in order to regulate the use of one specific machine, a machine that was expensive, few in numbers, and that could write but not read, namely the printing press. Ever since, copyright laws have tried with varying success to make other machines imitate the characteristics of that one-way medium. And the concept was pretty easily adapted to the first technologies of sound and image recording, as gramophone and film entered around the turn of the last century. But in the 70s, machines that could both read and write was spread to a wider population, like the Xerox paper copying machine, the audio cassette, and video recorders. This transformed the production of culture, as well as the distribution. Remix, cut-up, and mash-up cultures flourished, with early adopters like William S. Burroughs.
The industry started to claim that home taping was killing music. From the beginning, they wanted to stop the technology altogether. However, the common compromise solution in Western Europe came the introduction of a special tax on magnetic tapes in order to compensate the copyright holders for their calculated loss of sales. Since that time, the sampler, the CD burner, portable memory devices had continued to make life greater. Now we got the combination of home computers, broadband network protocols, compression algorithms that defines what is known as P2P and file sharing. As we stand here today, a fair question must be, If a principle that was implemented to control printing press in the 18th century England should be the hole which our present world should circulate through. Some people argue that, like a great work of art, copyright has been standing the test of time. But for us, it's only a confirmation how strong the basic function of information control is in society, that we, and as we depart from this control, are reaching further into the future.
Well, some voices now call for a so-called alternative compensation system as a way to save both the copyright system and the file sharing. The idea usually is that the special fee should be imposed on every internet connection so that the bureaucracy could channel the money to publishers and other right holders. It has been presented as a progressive alternative to mass criminalization and is advocated by, amongst others, Lawrence Lessig, the EFF, many people in the French Parliament now, and here in Germany by the campaign Fair Sharing, supported by, for example, ATTAC and CCC. However, a rather extraordinary development during this year, 2005, is that the anti-piracy organizations have also started to adopt this idea. In Sweden, Antipiratbyrån has made numerous demands about the so-called right for so-called content producers to rob the ISPs on part of their income. A British ISP has gone into a joint venture with Sony BMG, offering its customers the legal right to share Sony BMG-controlled music as long as they pay this flat rate fee. And as long as they accept that their file transfers are monitored and stopped if the filters detect transfers to people who not use the same ISP. People like Cory Doctorow from the EFF did applaud this as a step in the right directions. We see it more as a clear example of internet sabotage and economical blackmail from an industry that cannot accept to be pushed out by the future. So we have actually never been interested at all in so-called alternative compensation systems, as we generally find it is based on a thinking totally grounded in pre-digital media, based on the principle of loss, and denies the complexity of circulation in networks. So the copyright industry today likes to present the problem as if internet were just a way for so-called consumers to get so-called content. And if we now just got to have a reasonable distribution of money between ISPs and the content industry. But we must never fall in that trap, and we can avoid it by refusing to talk about content altogether. Instead, we talk about internet as communication media. And, I mean, as clever entrepreneurs, of course, also do understand, internet business is not about selling information. It is about selling the possibility to interact. And in addition to file sharing, people use their broadband connection to so many kinds of production, circulation, and communication. And therefore, it's totally wrong to regard our role as to represent consumer interests. On the contrary, it's all about leaving the artificial division of humanity into the two groups, producers and consumers, behind. But that division is constantly upheld by the copyright economy. One example is how independent music producers are robbed on money by collecting societies like GEMA in Deutschland, STIM in Sweden. Licenses have to be paid for concerts, for storage media, and for internet radio, and that's money that goes to the officially recognized producers according to record sales statistics, basically. Another example regards the movie industry's bizarre lobbying to plug the analog hole by introducing a law banning video equipment able to rip analog media. The law proposal put forward by the MPIA mentions that so-called professional producers, of course, should have a license to use these video cards anyway. So the effect would, of course, be an extreme consolidation of the split between producers and so-called users. But at the same time, it's important to understand the schizophrenic nature of industry, I mean, companies like Microsoft and Sony are already totally dependent on what they call user-generated content. As people are willing to pay for a possibility to exchange their own sounds and pictures via different communication protocols. So overcoming the split between producers and consumers, it's not some utopia of a world to come. That future is already here. The split is an abstraction that reinforces itself through the copyright economy, at the same time as it is undermined by the internet's desiring production.
Maybe the most important now is to bypass the urge for solutions, for victory in battles, and for compromise and stability. For example, talking about how to compensate copyright holders is to obscure the truth about the social production of culture, replacing it with a myth about copyright as some kind of wage for artists. And while some of the Creative Commons licenses can of course be useful, it would also be a trap to believe in that a songwriter reserved approach would do anything to cool down the anomalies that we are talking about. On the contrary, keep insisting on the gray zone and keep it as wide and as open as possible will almost automatically produce a better conditions for going beyond the prevalent economic imperatives. Making general statements about the alternative of copyright always brings the danger of strengthening copyright's universality claim. We think that our project has in general succeeded in escaping the most obvious retortalizations, like explaining file sharing just as a response to expensive records and instead open new gray stones. Make new links, make them live and kicking. Let the body of file sharing strategies become more unpredictable and more elastic to the constant pressure. The Pirate Bay is one example today, but we would also like to mention wonderful tools of other kinds like the Audio Scrabbler that helps people conceptualizing their relation to circulation of music outside the abstractions of the boring copyright mythology. While intellectual property will continue to be a battleground for the major clampdowns in society, there will always be innumerable loss of ways. Our approach has not very much to do with overcoming lack of access, not even with opposition of dominant forms of culture. The drive of discovering, thinking, inventing alternative processes of production is the affirmative power of life as a vital experiment of complexity. Internet piracy is all about desiring production, and in the deepest effect in the long run, are beyond our human capacity to compute. As Walter Benjamin talked about art as the production of desires that cannot yet be satisfied, but inevitably will reach far beyond the goals originally impossible to imagine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, if someone has any questions, then they maybe should take my microphone.
I have just one simple question. I don't understand purely your attitude. You say copying is always good, copy everything, because this attitude, I don't understand it. Can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Well, personally, I don't understand what else you could think. I mean, some copying is bad. I don't know. I don't understand it.
Okay, just one example. A friend of mine, he produced for 1.5 years a server who works with Ajax and some stuff like that. And now he wants to earn money because he invested 1.5 years. So you say everybody can copy this because...
Well, everyone can copy this.
Yeah, of course. But what is your attitude? Do you think they should copy it? Or that's what's my question is.
Well, we can't decide what people does copy. And we don't... I mean, it's only the anti-piracy side that believes in filters and that stuff. I understand what you mean. We are not the ones who are... trying to say it's wrong to earn money or like we hate profits. That's not our approach. I mean, we like copying, and we think that if someone wants to say that some copying is wrong and that it should be stopped, then it's up to them to declare how it should be stopped and how. I mean, we are tired of this. Fixating on the moral side in very general terms and want to push the question around and say, okay, if you don't like the copying, what do you want to do against it, basically?
So your attitude is copy everything, you can do it, so do it.
My attitude is copy me.
I fully agree in what you're saying right there, but where's the conciliatory tone? I mean, my issue is that somebody's going to film a panel of you, or somebody's going to film a panel of five teenagers sitting on stage saying they won't pay for anything, but still, you look at their phone bill and they're paying 45 euros a month for crappy ringtones, yeah. Which are low-sampled bits. And why are they paying this? Because it's difficult to get it into the phone. I'm just afraid that this not wanting really to talk ends up in more DRM, ends up in a worse situation than we are today, ends up with the telcos not just doing the same kind of stuff that they're doing with it within the UK, that you cannot share if it's beyond our network. How do you fit into that?
I mean, I find it totally interesting to talk about how to transform the cultural economies and so on, but I don't want to start that discussion in the end of copyright, because then you got to in some way accept copyrights in universal claim and imagine that like today copyright is a wage for artists, and it's not. So if I am to discuss the cultural economics. I want to start in the reality of culture and culture circulation. And I think if we start in copyright, we have already done the most fundamental wrong, which is to regard like the recordings of music or film as the only way to get in money. I mean, I'm a musician myself. I know that like... Most musicians earn money by playing live and making performances. And if we talk about the alternative to copyright, we are already on the totally wrong track, I think. Okay. So I think it's really interesting that copyright can open up that discussion, but that discussion itself must start from a totally different perspective.
Exactly, but I don't... I think that was probably the element of your talk that I was missing, which is what is the alternative? Because there was the only alternative that you showed... You basically put down, and I just think it's an important thing to remember in these discussions. So this is also as much a comment than it is a question. Thanks.
I just wanted to respond to the person asking the question actually by saying that it seems to me that the internet community and internet users have made quite some efforts and done some serious thinking on alternatives to copyright and fair balance between artist compensation, and it's the music and movie industry and the classic copyright owners, corporations, who have, you know, done things way beyond the law, like spending several hundred million euros a year in Europe lobbying for DRM and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think we are the ones who've been declared war upon, and this is just basically fighting back, and totally within our rights. But maybe not everybody will see it like that, but probably eventually in 200 years people will see it like that. History is on our side probably here.
Yeah, I might want to comment on that. I mean, What we basically have is two fights of the music and the film industry. We have the fight against copying as a of private people, and we have the big fear of music industry that that their stance will be brought down because of basically amateurs producing the same kind of content. Yeah. Both can be threatened by DRM, and that's a big problem. Because on one hand, amateurs could be locked down by DRM if they, you know, if the consumer can't listen to their music, and the consumer consumer being you and me, can't possibly copy music that is somehow protected by DRM either. What I didn't see in your talk is what are you putting against the big threat of DRM, where I can only see a political solution such as something like an alternative compensation system, and a prohibition of DRM. What is your stance on that? I mean,
DRM,
buying nothing is not the right solution because there's too many people still buying the stuff, and TVs break, and then you buy a TV that can't, you know, show non-DRM material, for example.
Well, I think our activities against DRM is like highlighting what it is about, kicking to life this discussion and making it visible. Like, what is this kind of product? Who the fuck is want to buy that? And so on. And I mean, the Sony BMG Rootkick scandal was, of course, wonderful this year. It has been so many possibilities opened by that, and I don't think that will be the last if we just try to keep this up. I don't see that the answer to DRM is like finding alternatives to DRM. But that should be like something like circumventionism. I think, but that's of course there's different strategies, and we have never said, I can clarify that too, I mean, we have never said that our approach should be the only approach, or that like we are the party or something. Well, we party in the let's party sense, but not in any other sense. So I mean, of course there should be several approaches, and I can see that there are really strategical richness in the many approaches.
Hi, I would like to add maybe one level of complexity here. In the global economy, I think that we could see at least two parts. There are insiders and there are outsiders in the global economy. So for example, I'm coming from Croatia, and we are a country in transition, and together with all of the suspicions and doubts about joining European Union, there is no really other solution. So the only Eurosceptics in Croatia are actually right-wing morons. And a couple of years ago, we had completely unregulated anything about the copyright. So one of the preconditions there is protect copyright. So then you can join the European Communion in this case. And in Serbia, it's still really unregulated. So saying just be a pirate where you don't have any system, where government is actually corrupted and where government is the biggest pirate you can imagine, saying like just pirate that, it's not really the right approach in my opinion. And I think that things like free software as part of the regulation in a way of having GPL or Creative Commons actually is much better approach for that kind of context. And I can see that if you are inside, that piratization and pirate could be well articulated as a subversive art, could be well articulated as a political action, but I'm not sure that the same approach could be used everywhere. And also, I'm quite sure that at least it can't be said in public. So what I would like to say is that do that in private in countries in transition, because it has some impact, and do the completely different thing in public. Okay. That's kind of hacking.
I mean, for us, it's of course a language game. I mean, the word was already established, and we could just appropriate it and surf on that. And I don't say that that's the word that should be used everywhere in the world, but at the same time, I mean, as there is so much talk about piracy, it can be a point in like appropriating that word and give it new meanings. It's not only infringing copyright, it's like growing your own information infrastructures in general. But then of course, we are not like saying that piracy is more important than free software or something. It's like it's not that kind of prioritizations. And we are taking up all kinds of questions in our reporting and trying to get them together.
I think to answer to you, I think it's both is important. On one thing, it's important to do it privately, and in one sense, it's very important to make it public. Because I think if we have a mix of strategies, it's very important, for example, to get big content of public broadcast under Creative Commons license on the internet. For sure, there you need very different strategies. But if we talk about file sharing and about the use of cultural goods, then it is very important to sort of give people a voice. Many people do it, but if they don't have a voice, the pressure will get stronger and stronger. And if people who do it, who have this practice, have a voice, which they have like with projects like this, then they are able to fight back, and there will be a balance. Because in copyright law, is never the law is important. Always important is what is the balance in praxis. And
exactly.
It's not only about fighting for better laws, it's also fighting for better praxis, and you should keep that in mind, I think, and then bring this together. And that's why you don't only do it in private, but also make it public what you do and why it is important to do it.
Yes, and you can say it like, without mental rights management, you cannot establish digital rights management, because you got to have the mental rights management to get people to accept it.
Well,
can you say one more thing? We would like to, if someone wants to talk to like us or the other people from our delegation, people from Piratbyen and the Pirate Bay about anything, we said we could meet at like 8 o'clock this evening. I don't know where should we meet? Okay, downstairs. Sure. Oh.
Can I say just one thing before everybody leaves? Everybody, I work for one of the major Nordic ISPs, and just everybody remember that this copying relies on prevalence of unmetered bandwidth. And if everybody is using a lot of bandwidth, that unmetered bandwidth is probably going to be metered fairly quickly. So everything relies on free bandwidth at a flat fee. And the cost model for the ISP is not that bandwidth is free. So right now we're living in a world where usage for 10% of the users, the high volume users, is basically free. And the rest of the 90% is paying for it. If those 90% start to use the same pattern, this unmetered internet is going away, most likely. And then people are not going to pay to upload content to other people without getting anything back. Just one thing to think about.